Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Outreach Radio, brought to you by the Elite Speakers Bureau. Join ESB owners and your hosts, Denise Brown and Danielle Pierre, as they discuss and interview their expert speakers regarding topics such as violence prevention, school safety, suicide prevention, addiction and recovery, mental health and wellness, leadership, and more. Denise and Danielle also interview event hosts about their upcoming events, so tune in weekly to ask questions, find solutions, or get event information. All showtimes to be announced. And now, here's your hosts, Denise and Danielle.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Outreach Radio. This is Danielle. I was going to say this is
Danielle.
No! This is Danielle.
Hey, Danielle, I'm so glad you're back. We missed you last week.
Yeah, thank you. Just had some things I had to take care of. Thank you for covering. But here I am.
Sure.
And we have an amazing guest tonight. I'm really excited. Kevin Hines. And Kevin has an amazing story of survival. He had attempted to take his own life years ago by jumping off the Golden Gate Bridge, and he survived that jump. So today, Kevin is a global speaker, author, mental health advocate who reaches audiences with his story of an unlikely survival and his strong will to live. So, Kevin, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here, you guys.
Hey, Kevin, welcome.
Hi.
Oh, my gosh. You know, can I just say that I am so glad you're here today to talk about this, because suicide you hear about all the time. I mean, there is something in the news every single day. And you are the very first person that I have ever been able to talk to that has actually done something like this. You've survived it, jumping off the Golden Gate Bridge. I mean, that's high. And I just want you to tap on, I hope you don't mind, to tap just for a second on, you know, what brought you to this. And then we want to talk about just your survival and everything that followed that, because we don't want to talk too much about this. We want to know about your recovery and the things that you're doing now. But just so you can touch just a tad on that, if you don't mind.
Sure. No, certainly, of course. I was living with bipolar disorder, type 1 with psychotic features, for 2 years prior to my attempt. I was living with it, but I was in denial of it. I was binge drinking on the weekends until blackout while taking psychotropic medication, something that could end in my death alone. And I was ignoring my family. I was ignoring my doctors. I was ignoring protocol when you have been diagnosed with a mental illness. And I just wanted this thing to stop. I wanted this suffering to stop. I wasn't being honest with the people around me about my serious, very, very serious symptoms of psychosis. I was hiding them.
Mm-hmm.
That's what led me on September 25th of 2000, 15 years ago almost, to try and take my life off of that bridge.
Oh, wow.
Can I ask you, Kevin, why you were, if you don't mind going over this real quick, why you were hiding them? Were you afraid of? I think this might be helpful to maybe some listeners that might be going through the same thing. Why were you hiding your symptoms?
I mean, I was going to a psychiatrist. I was going there, and I was pretending that I was okay, because I feared that my family, I feared unrealistically, that they would lock me up in a white-walled padded room and throw away the key. That's what I thought happened because, frankly, because of mass media and the portrayal of psychiatric patients in movies, I thought that was my fate. I remember thinking back to, you know, even the film Terminator 2, when he goes into the psych ward to remove the mother to save the world, you know, I thought that they would deem me insane and lock me up and never let me out.
Oh, that's horrifying.
Oh, my God. So there's so much fear and so much, I totally get that, because I see these movies. So, I mean, that was like such a visual for me when you just said, you know, about the movies and the stigma and all that, because, wow, you do remember that. Now, also, Kevin, when people who have survived, and they always say, you know, halfway down or a little way down, they wish they would not have done it. Did you wish that?
Oh, Danielle,
did you ever go there?
The millisecond my hands left the rail, my only thoughts were, what have I just done? I don't want to die. God, please save me. It was an instant regret.
Oh,
God,
Kevin. Breaks my heart, but you know what? You're here.
Yeah, I'm here. Here I am. Yeah, absolutely.
You're here. And now what are you doing? Or how have you come from 2000, the year 2000, and done your work and done your things and, you know, steps of the way of incredible survival and this incredible gift of a second chance?
It's a gift of a second chance. It's a journey that I've been on. I've been on this journey with my entire family and all of my friends and my colleagues, quite frankly. And in 2001, 7 months after my attempt, I was wearing a back brace and I was walking with a cane, barely kind of hobbling around, if you will, trying to recuperate physically. In that hospital, both the physical hospital when they restructured my spine with metal, and so I could walk properly and everything, and both the psychiatric ward I had to go afterwards, in both those places there was a chaplain. His name was Brother George Cherry. He was a Franciscan friar. And when I first met Brother George Cherry, he walked into my room, and he had no idea why I was in the hospital. He just knew I was banged up and that he wanted to pray for me if I would allow it. And he walked in, and he said, "Hey, kid, what are you in for?" And I looked at him, and I said, "Well, I jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge." He said, "Oh, yeah, and I'm the Pope." He thought I was delusional. And my father came around and said, "No, brother, that's what happened. If you looked at this man, Brother Cherry, he looked like the epitome of, or the visualization of St. Francis himself. You know, he had the half white hair going around his head, you know, the kind of Fu Manchu going, the brown robe with the rope, the rosary in one hand. I mean, if you just took a picture of this guy and put a cartoon bird on his shoulder, it would have been St. Francis." He said to me, "You know, Kevin, when you get better, you have to talk about this." And I looked at him, and I said, "About what to who?" I didn't understand at all what he meant. And he said, "You'll understand someday." And every single day from both hospitalizations, he would come in, he would pray with me, and he would say at the end of the prayer, "When you get better, I expect you to talk about this." And I was ready to ignore him completely. I was completely reluctant. I didn't know what he meant. He didn't explain further. I didn't know that he was at the time, he was the president of the board of San Francisco Suicide Prevention, an organization that I ended up working with, my first one, when I started speaking publicly about my attempts. Anyway, so I got out of the hospital. I got out of both hospitals, and my dad and I were going to church because we're church going people. And we go to church, and we come outside, and I'm here. I am with this back brace and a cane. I've gone from a wheelchair to a walker to a back brace and a cane in a matter of weeks. And
wow, that's a quick recovery.
It was a very quick recovery physically. The priest came out at the end of the sermon, and he said, "Hey, would you mind coming and talking to our 7th and 8th grade class on Good Friday?" And I looked at him, and I said, "Oh, Father, you know, I don't have a speech, and I wouldn't know what to say." And if it weren't for my father at that moment, I think my life would be very different, because my father took his oven mitt-sized hands, shoved me forward, and he said, "He'll do it." And my father is 6'1", and I'm 5'7", so you know what happened. I turned around and looked at my dad. He said, "You're doing this. We need closure." And I turned around to the priest. I said, "I'll see you on Good Friday." Not knowing what I was going to talk about, how it was going to affect me, if it was going to affect anybody else. And so I get there on Good Friday. I'm freaking out. I mean, the night before, I was up till 3 a.m. writing a speech, which is very mentally unhealthy, by the way. I'm up till 3 a.m. writing this speech, and I get there and I talk to these kids. I mean, I'm shaking. I'm reading from the page of these 17-page speech. I'm crying my eyes out. I'm crying my eyes out because it's so raw, and these kids are really taking it in, and I end up getting 120 letters from 120 kids 2 weeks later, several of which were actively suicidal, and they were given the help they needed because those letters were screened because they were minors.
Wow.
And when that happened, when I found that out, I went home to my father after I picked up those letters, and I said, "Dad, we have to do this. However, whenever, wherever, we have to make this happen." And so my dad and I would just reach out anywhere, everywhere, and ask people if they wanted to hear the story. And from there, it blossomed. In 2006, I joined the Speakers Bureau. In 2009, I joined another one. And just this year, I think you know the one I joined this year.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, you are global. You are international. Yeah. You just got back from Australia. How was that?
Yeah. It was both amazing and heartbreaking, and I'll tell you why. I went to Australia to talk to the New South Wales Police Force in Australia, and that was an amazing experience, one of the best conferences, and maybe the best conference I've been into in 15 years, and that's hard to say because they're all pretty impactful, but this was probably the most impactful for me, this one and the Mates in Construction conference that followed in Australia, in Queensland. So I went and both in Sydney, and then I went to Queensland later. I went to talk to the police force so they could talk about how they could better help those struggling with mental health issues, of which they arrest and put away the majority of the people they put away. And instead of us taking these non-criminally insane, but certainly mentally struggling people kind of need recovery. They're desperate for recovery, but they don't know where to turn or who to talk to. The police force has now trained almost all of their over 1,200 officers. And this was part of that. We got to train them in mental health so they could both affect their own lives, which they're dying by suicide at an alarming rate as well, the officers, and the people they protect and serve. And so that was an amazing experience. And then I spoke for Mates in Construction, and we did an entire Mateship Matters tour, men talking to men about their mental suffering, because one of the things in Australia is when these guys are what they call doing it tough, when they're working these very hardcore macho jobs, they're not talking about their internal struggles and pain. And we got a chance to travel all over West Queensland, in the outback, way in the outback, where they told us that 98% of Australians never go. And where they told us that all the kids, all the youth that are growing up and they're hitting 16, 17, 18, they're getting the heck out of there because they've had a five-year drought, a drought that has caused the emaciation of all their wallabies and kangaroos, a drought that has caused their cows and horses to wither away and die, and a drought that has caused the only way to make some good money by fracking and messing with the ecological timetable. So, you know, when you look at that, and you look at these, you know, we went to speeches all over that area, and it was a vast area, you know. And when you look at that, and you have people come to your presentations representing every single family of the entire town, they're clearly in a world of hurt. We were able, myself, Speaker Kevin Briggs, you know, the Guardian of the Golden Gate Bridge. His book's coming out soon, and then Sean McCarthy also spoke from Ireland, and we were able to bring this international web of information that they didn't have before, and try just attempt to give them some semblance of hope that you don't have to die by suicide. There is a way, and the people that are coming into West Queensland to try to help the outback are serious, and they want to make sure you stay alive.
No, Kevin, there's so many people that suffer from mental illness, and not just people that are suffering from diagnosed mental illnesses, but people that actually consider this maybe on a daily to weekly basis as an option to get away from their troubles in the back of their mind. And it lays there like, okay, well, if all else failed, right? Mm-hmm. So what I guess what I'm trying to say or ask you is, some tools for our listeners, because I know that there's just the title of this show alone is going to attract people that obviously are interested in hearing what you have to say. You attempted suicide. You survived. And that moment is very important that you said when you right after you jumped, you wish you had not. That's an important piece because I think that, you know, people should hear that, that maybe are considering it and why you didn't, why you wished you hadn't. But also some tools maybe that you can give or advice that you can give to people that are suffering from, you know, there's so many. Just the numbers you just gave us in the high school, in that talk you did in the high school, that's alarming to me because many children are out there, you know, with this on the edge of their minds.
Yeah. And look, you know, we can be in denial as a country or internationally is all we want that this doesn't happen to kids. It is happening to kids. Kids as young as 5 and 6 years of age. I'm currently working on a consulting with an application, a web application called Concern, so that we can get people in every community to see someone in active physical, emotional, mental damage or danger and make that call so they can get them to safety. So what I'll tell you a few of these steps that I use every single day, because this is what keeps me motivated, it keeps me driven, but it keeps me alive. I live with chronic suicidal thoughts. I will not let them take me by my own hands. It will not happen. And that's a resolve that I've created and developed over the last 15 years. And the first thing I utilize is different forms of therapy. And so let's talk about what kind of forms I use every day. I use Blue Wave light box technology. It's this little light box made by, I'm not going to say what company because I want to give a plug here, but it's made by different companies. And Blue Wave light box technology is like harnessing the power of the sun. And especially in San Francisco, when we don't get sun every single day, that's just clear.
Very fog.
You use this Blue Wave light technology that goes into your eyes, it goes to the back of your brain, and it creates this almost like recycled vitamin D effect. And it increases your somatic wellness by increasing better mood. I use every single morning. Every morning I wake up, I turn on my computer, I get to work, I put the Blue Wave light box technology right next to me. It shines in my lights. I never look directly into it. But I had that prescribed by a doctor. I didn't just go out and get that because someone said you should. They were using it initially for, the disorder, seasonal
Kevin,
disorder.
While you're thinking about that, is that because, you know, like in like a lot of these northern states, I mean, you know, the Washington, the Oregon, the North California, you guys don't have enough sun. So this is giving you the same effect as the sun? Because down here, I totally understand what you're talking about, because down here in Laguna Beach, I have sun pretty much all the time. And I wake up in the morning, I open my window, and I go, oh, my God, it's a gorgeous day. I am loving life.
Yes.
And then when it's not, it totally affects me. And I'm like, oh, my God, where's the sun? Why is this? So that box does the same thing as opening up my window and seeing the sun.
Yeah. And if we just took into account how much vitamin D deficiency affects our mental health around the globe, we could change things. And they're using this at universities right now, certain universities in the Bible Belt when they don't get enough sun sometimes a year. And they're using this so that students know that there are other ways of helping you with your somatic wellness so you can feel better most days. So that's one piece of therapy I utilize every single day. Once a week I go to cognitive behavioral therapy when I'm in town. When I'm not in town, I make sure I reach out to my doctor. I let that person know exactly how I'm feeling, when I'm feeling it, and let us talk about that. If I'm not going to be in town for an entire week, I make that phone call to the people I need to download my mental pain to so that they can help me get through the day. All those things are very important. Personally, for me, I take medication. It helps me, and I understand very clearly that it doesn't help every human being. But the fact that I have utilized medication for the last many years, religiously I take it in the morning and at night at the exact same time a day. Now, when I'm on a plane and I'm traveling overseas, that means that I time myself and I make sure that I'm taking it at the same time, even while traveling. It's very important. It's very important that if you're going to take it, honestly and religiously, and it's important that if you're going to take it, you're not going to mess around with it and play around with it like it's a joke. When I was drinking on psychotropic medications, I literally could have died, and that's a very dangerous rabbit hole to go down.
Because when you're drinking, you really don't think about it. You don't think about taking the medication.
Well, you
think that you're invincible.
Right.
You think it's like a, and then the combination. I mean, how many times have we heard that alcohol and Valium or alcohol and any kind of medication can kill you, and people still do it.
People take that risk just like I did, and maybe it's not going to kill you, but it's certainly going to mess up the effect of the medication on you and your mental struggle. So you just have to be aware of that. I exercise probably every single day, 20 minutes a day at least, and I do that because 23 minutes of rigorous exercise a day leads to 12 hours of better mood. So more often than not, I exercise actually 3 days a week, but what I will do is I'll do 2 times 3 days a week. So in the morning and in the evening, I'll exercise exactly 23 minutes continuously, which leads to 24 hours of increased somatic wellness and better mood. So these are things you can do in your home. If you have the capability, if you're physically able to exercise, you know, you can use the furniture, you can use chairs, you can use the floor for push-ups. You can use any wall for isometrics and plyometrics. All of these things are in your wheelhouse. You just have to accept them and start going through them.
That's important. That's an important word, acceptance. An important one. You just said it. Yeah.
Here's a big one. Here's one of the biggest ones. Maybe even the most important one. And I'll stop here, and I can share you the rest another time. But here's the most important one, I think. Sleep pattern, your circadian rhythm. If your circadian rhythm, if your sleep pattern is off by a hair, it's going to affect the rest of your day.
Explain what that is.
If you are,
please.
Well, so if you're a person, your circadian rhythm is the hours you sleep a night, okay?
Right.
Or if you work at night and you sleep in the day, the hours you sleep in the day, of course. But if you don't have 7 to 8 hours of sleep most nights, I'm talking 5 to 7 nights a week, sufficient sleep is the most essential for your wellness combined with these other steps. If you are living with insomnia, which so many people across this country and around the globe are, I just talked to a guy in Australia who lives with insomnia, and he is really having a hard time. Insomnia leads to psychosis all by itself because your brain is so depleted and deprived of sleep. So if you're not finding a way to get those at least 7 to 8 hours a night, at least 5 nights out of 7 a week, you're going to have a hard time mentally in general. If you already have a mental illness like I did when I didn't sleep 14 days but 2 hours prior to my jump, you are in trouble. So the idea there is to go to your doctor and find out how you can naturally find a better sleeping pattern. There are now apps out there that help you wake up to be a better morning person. There are apps out there that when you can't sleep, it plays certain music to get you to lull you back into a pattern. And what I did when I was living without sleep for so long, and I ended up in my third psych ward stay because of it, what I did was I would just force myself to build a pattern. So I would wake up at 6:30 in the morning, every morning, 1 hour before everybody else in the ward woke up. I would do my exercises in the morning. I would do my exercises in the evening. And I would go to sleep, as in I would lay down without sleep. I would stare at the ceiling. I stared at the ceiling, but I tried to meditate myself to sleep. So I would count things like sheep. For me, it was more like comic book characters, you know, that kind of thing.
Counting backwards worked really well. FYI. Counting from 100 backwards.
Whether it's sheep, comic book characters, or family members, just do it. Because what you've got to do is create that pattern and create that consistency. It takes a lot of discipline, but it's entirely possible.
Well, why don't we simplify this for the listeners that are struggling so that, that they can start somewhere, but they don't have to start with a big, the whole enchilada. So would you say sleep, exercise, commit to something? So maybe sleep, exercise, and then seeking help in case they do need medication or something along those lines, and let that that lead itself. Yeah. What do you think about that?
And
is there
I
a certain
would say one
thing you think
before,
you would...
I would say sleep, exercise, honesty, and seeking help, because you can't seek help without telling the truth about what you're going through.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that one.
Yeah. And telling the truth about what you're going through mentally...
Go ahead.
Isn't the first step to any kind of, healing or anything like that is to actually admitting that you do have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And
I
always think that that's the first step to anything. And, I have one of those bracelets, and I wear that, and I am shocked when I see that, like, the real REM and the deep sleep is maybe only, like, 3 hours and 45 minutes a night, and then the rest of it is another 3 hour and 45 minutes. And I sit there and I just go, wow, because you can monitor how deep you sleep and how well you sleep on some of these wristbands. And I think they're totally amazing. And you sit there and you just really have to – yeah, you look at it and you go, oh, my God, that's why I'm so tired. Okay, now I've got to get into some kind of a rhythm, just like you said. So, that's
exactly.
Taken me up a lot.
Listen, anyone can live a better life with strict routine. Anyone. Anyone can live a more well life with a strict routine. If you're scatterbrained and you've got everything all over the place and you're not focused, and it doesn't matter who you are, whether you have mental illness or not, you can live a less stressed out life with a very strict routine of all these types of things.
And you just need to bring them all together and start somewhere.
Exactly.
Real quick, I'm going to give the suicide prevention lifeline for anybody who's listening. And it's 1-800-273-TALK. Okay. Just putting that out there in case this has inspired somebody maybe to start that ball rolling. And Kevin, I'm sorry, Denise, you were going to ask a question. I interrupted you, and I didn't mean.
I just think this is just incredible, all of it. Kevin, I am so happy you are still with us. You're alive today to talk about what it is. I listen to you, and I hear your routine, and I think, wow, it is about discipline. You have to discipline yourself. Otherwise, you have to have that routine in your life. And, as I was growing up, I used to always think, God, Dad, why are you so regimented? Why is it like this? You wake up. You do this. But you know what? I totally get it now. And, I'm not that kid that was living at home with him anymore, but he had a routine. He was in the military. He was a fighter pilot, World War II. So, they come back with a lot of these issues and things. He never talked about it. But I can totally see why he had to have his routine in his life. So, gosh, thanks so much for sharing that with us. I really appreciate it. And I know that you're going to be helping so many people. So many people and that just need to hear your message, and we just got to get you out there. And the Elite Speakers Bureau is going to do just that. We're going to get you out there, and we're going to get you speaking so that we can save lives.
Thank you, guys. I'm glad to be a part of the team, and I'm excited.
Awesome.
Thanks,
Kevin. Thanks
so much.
And I don't know where I'm scattered today. You can find Kevin at theelitespeakersbureau.com. And I'm going to go ahead and put some of that information you just gave us on our link there for you at the radio show. Okay, so people can access that. And that was it Blue Wave? And I'm going to look that up. Blue Wave Lightbox Technology?
Yeah, Blue Wave Lightbox Technology. That's right.
Okay, perfect. And then some of those other skills. So anybody who's interested, go ahead and go to theelitespeakersbureau.com, click on Kevin. He's on our front page, and I'll have some of that information there for you. Thanks, Kevin. Have a wonderful day.
Thanks, Kevin.
All right, take care, guys. You too. Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. Please join us again next Tuesday night for another great show. For more information about upcoming shows, visit us at www.outreachradioshow.com.